This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees. Hello, I'm Alec Hogg, and it is Tuesday, the 4th of February. Many people are confused by what's happened over the past few days with Donald Trump targeting South Africa in the same way as he's been making statements about first Colombia, then Canada, then Mexico. And there is concerns in South Africa about what this all means and where we're headed, especially as it comes after a World Economic Forum annual meeting where South Africa appeared to be very much on a different page to where the US and other growing economies are going. So the member in the Government of National Unity who leads the Democratic Alliance and also is the Minister of Agriculture, John Steenhuisen, agreed to have a chat with me early this morning before he went off to Parliament. That interview is on BizNews TV on YouTube. But here's a highlight which might leave you feeling maybe just a little bit more positive. I asked John how the DA can make a positive contribution in the fight that we're seeing between the ANC and Donald Trump.
Well, but it's about calming things down and trying to be a responsible, mature interlocutor of the interests of both countries. As I said, it's not in America's interest to not have a good relationship with South Africa. We do have strategic minerals. We do have wonderful agricultural products that they benefit from. But likewise, we can't afford to have a bad relationship with the United States. We need to operate, as I said, in the global geopolitical environment. It doesn't mean that they agree with everything we do. It doesn't mean we agree with everything that they do. But I think it is in both of our interests as a country that there is mutual cooperation and at least channels for us to discuss these differences and how we can best resolve them. I don't think it's going to be assisted by saber rattling from either side. It's going to need some mature cool heads to sit around a table and say, right, what do we require to have a good relationship going forward? And how's the quickest way for us to get there with as least disruption to our economy and with maximum benefit for both of our countries? I think that's the way to proceed.
But how do you do that when you've got such anger on both sides and such an ideological chasm?
I don't think that it's that as bad as it looks at the beginning. I mean, you know, I think that there's a lot of saber acting that happens in countries around the world. America's got its views on China, yet the two of them have to sit around a table to discuss matters because they are the two largest economies in the world. There's no reason just because there may be some differences that you can't sit down and say, right, these are the differences. How do we manage those? But here are the areas of commonality, and how can we build on these going forward? And I think everyone's got a role to play. I think the Western Cape government's got a role to play, and Premier Alan Windey. I think that national government ministers, I think we should be sending delegations to the United States to meet with key lawmakers and secretaries of state in Washington to explain to them what's going on, to take them through our medium-term development plan and to start to rekindle those relationships. Winston Churchill famously said, jaw-jaw is better than war-war. And in this instance, I think the more we can have jaw-jaw with our opposite numbers in Washington, I think the better it's going to be for the economy. I will certainly be reaching out to the new Secretary of Agriculture. I had a very good relationship with the previous one. We often would confer on Zoom and met each other on the sidelines of the G7 and G20 to take up the issues that, you know, from both of our sides where there were problems and how we could resolve them. And I certainly hope to have a good relationship with the incoming Secretary of State for Agriculture. And as I said, my office will be reaching out to him within the next week to try and set up bilaterals either on Zoom or in person so we can start to discuss how agricultural cooperation can continue between our two countries, because from the agricultural perspective, the access to their market is very important. Access to technology and science, very important for our agricultural sector.
And at least the new or the likely new US ambassador to South Africa, is not an outsider. He knows all about how things work in this country. Is he from South Africa? Was he born here?
My understanding is he is a South African. He certainly spent a lot of time here. And of course, his mother-in-law was Rhoda Kadali. I mean, very well-known political commentator, writer, and academic in the country. And Joel wrote her biography. So I think he's very in tuned with what is, where South Africa's come from, where it has stumbled, but now also where it needs to go. And I think it's in the where it needs to go phase where I think we should be reaching out and cooperating.
Well, that's Joel Pollack then. If he is appointed, he'll probably be by far the most insightful best prepared U.S. ambassador to South Africa. Just, John, it sounds to me like this is a crisis, but you're not going to let it be wasted.
Absolutely. I think, as you said, it's an opportunity for a reset, just as the crisis with the way in which the coalition partners have been treated has precipitated a reset in relations within the GNU. I think we now have an opportunity to grasp it. It is a new administration. We can't wish it away. It's going to be here for 5 years. We've got to be navigators. There's a famous saying, you can't be a sailor that curses the sea. We have to now navigate these choppy waters and find the best way forward, not for ideology, not for political ends, but for the national interest of South Africa.
Dare we hope that peace will break out. Well, there's a heck of a lot of land or time to make up between the two parties. Something else that is occupying South African minds right now is the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And indeed, some good news there, as we hear from our partners at Bloomberg. The M23 rebels, allegedly supported by Rwanda, have begun a ceasefire. But there's a sting in the tail on this story. And the president of Rwanda naming South Africa, or South Africans, who are there stealing the DRC's minerals. Now, this is a rumor that has been circulating for a long, long time. Let's hope that those lives of South African soldiers have not been given up for some greedy countrymen. Let's listen in to our partners at Bloomberg.
M23 rebels in the Democratic Republic of Congo have declared a unilateral ceasefire for humanitarian reasons. That's as G7 nations demanded the Rwanda-backed militia halt an offensive that has shaken the eastern part of the country. The UN says at least 900 people were killed in Goma during the assault. Let's get more from Bloomberg's Andiro Oganga, who is joining us in Kigali. So, Andiro, what can we expect following the ceasefire announcement? And the big question is it actually expected to hold this time around?
Hi, Jen. So what we can expect is M23 is expected to cease its offense on the southern part of Kivu. And they said in a statement that they have no intention of capturing Bukavu. Instead, they're going to protect their position and they're going to protect civilians. They're also calling for the withdrawal of some DRC, saying that their mandate is no longer justified. And this ceasefire comes at a critical time because the humanitarian situation in Goma is worsening. A city of 2 million people in dire need of water, food, fuel, and medical supplies. And the UN fears that there's heightened risk of disease outbreaks such as cholera, mpox, and measles. And in the intro, you mentioned 900 dead. These are people that were killed in the streets without factoring in the bodies that are lying in the morgues. 2,800 have been injured, and hospitals have been overrun. So the ceasefire lays really good groundwork for the summit that is to be held in Tanzania between heads of state from EAC and SADC. And DRC's President Felix Tshisekedi has confirmed that he'll be attending, unlike last time where he was a no-show, and promised to fight back much the frustration of his Rwandan counterpart, who's always maintained that Rwanda is not supporting M23 rebels. But when CNN tasked him to explain if there are Rwandan troops in DRC, he said he didn't know. He opted to shift blame and say the people that are stealing minerals in DRC are South Africa. And this assertion is expected to cause tension after we saw a diplomatic spat between the two African countries in the previous meeting.
So it's South Africa, says Kagame, that has been the real cause of all the chaos. Let's hope we can get to the bottom of that story. Well, a story that we are getting to the bottom of is the whole DeepSeek saga, the Chinese AI firm that shocked the the establishment in the past couple of weeks by doing almost the same as what ChatGPT does, but at a fraction of the cost. Our partners at The Economist put together a leader article. Here are the main points.
The market reaction when it came was brutal. On January the 27th, as investors realized just how good DeepSeek's V3 and R1 models were, they wiped around $1 trillion off the market capitalization of America's listed tech firms. Nvidia, a chip maker and the chief shovel seller of the artificial intelligence, or AI, gold rush, saw its value fall by $600 billion. Yet even if the Chinese model makers' new releases rattled investors in a handful of firms, there should be a cause for optimism for the world at large. DeepSeek shows how competition and innovation will make AI cheaper and therefore more useful. DeepSeek's models are practically as good as those made by Google and OpenAI and have been produced at a fraction of the cost. Barred by American export controls from using cutting-edge chips, the Chinese firm undertook an efficiency drive, even reprogramming the chips it used to train the model to eke out every drop of power. The cost of building an AI model that can stand toe-to-toe with the best has plummeted. Within days of its release, DeepSeek's chatbot was the most downloaded app on the iPhone. The contrast with America's approach could not be starker. Sam Altman, the boss of OpenAI, has spent years telling investors and America's new president that vast sums of money and computing power are needed to stay at the forefront of AI. Investors have accordingly been betting that a handful of firms stand to reap vast monopoly-like rents. Yet if fast followers such as DeepSeek can eat away at that lead for a fraction of the cost, then those potential profits are at risk. Efficiency gains are likely to result in greater use of AI. The Jevons paradox, the observation that greater efficiency can lead to more, not less, use of an industrial input, may come into play. The possible applications for a language model with computing costs as cheap as DeepSeek's, $1 per million tokens, are vastly more numerous than those for Anthropic's, $15 per million tokens. Many uses for cheaper AI are as yet unimagined. Even Nvidia may not suffer too much in the long run. Although its market clout may be diminished, it will continue to sell chips in vast quantities. However, the real winners will be consumers. For AI to transform society, it needs to be cheap, ubiquitous, and out of the control of any one country or company. Some have begun to suggest that DeepSeek's improvements don't count because they are a consequence of distilling American models' intelligence into its own software. Even if that were so, R1 remains a groundbreaking innovation. The ease with which DeepSeek found greater efficiency will spur competition. It suggests many more such gains are still to be discovered. For 2 years, the biggest American AI labs have vied to make ever more marginal improvements in the quality of their models, rather than models that are cheap, fast, and good. DeepSeek shows there is a better way.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Fascinating story, and very good for us here in South Africa. In fact, uplifting story that one is that AI is becoming more accessible and that you can actually compete if you're far away from Silicon Valley. And then you look back at the Steenhuisen message, which really is uplifting as well. Maybe what we're going through at the moment with Donald Trump and Elon Musk and the whole American criticism of South Africa will help our governors to come a little more on board with something that is going to change and get this economy growing. Well, talking about Donald Trump, he says that Elon Musk is doing a grand job. He spoke with reporters at the White House yesterday.
Mr. President, why is it important for Elon Musk to have access to the payment systems at Treasury?
Well, he's got access only to letting people go that he thinks are no good if we agree with him. And it's only if we agree with him. He's a very talented guy from the standpoint of management and costs. And we put him in charge of seeing what he can do with certain groups and certain numbers. The numbers, some of the numbers are horrible, what he's found. $100 million on condoms to Hamas. Condoms to Hamas. And many other things that are frankly even more ridiculous. And they're finding tremendous waste, more than anything else, I think you could say. Probably fraud and abuse can be added to it. The more standard waste, fraud and abuse. But they're finding tremendous amounts of really bad things, bad spending. You've been writing about some of it, frankly, and some of the things that they've been doing is just terrible. Elon can't do and won't do anything without our approval, and we'll give him the approval where appropriate. Where not appropriate, we won't. But he reports in, and he... It's something that he feels very strongly about, and I'm impressed because he's running, obviously, a big company. It has nothing to do, if there's a conflict, that we won't let him get near it. But he does have a good natural instinct. He's got a team of very talented people. We're trying to shrink government, and he can probably shrink it as well as anybody else, if not better. Where we think there's a conflict or there's a problem, we won't let him go near it.
Fascinating. A South African-born lad who's actually making such big headway in the United States, such an important job. Here, talking about South Africa, on our local front, some more news out of MultiChoice. You might recall that in April last year, the French group Canal Plus announced that it's going to make an offer of 125 Rand a share to MultiChoice shareholders. Well, the devil's in the detail, and the biggest devil, as far as Canal Plus is concerned, is the license that MultiChoice owns to broadcast in South Africa. So they've managed today, the announcement came out, to sort this out by taking the broadcast license from MultiChoice, putting it into a separate entity, which will be black-owned. Owned 27% by Putuma Nati shareholders, who are the BEE shareholders in MultiChoice. They've been there for quite some time. And the balance between a workers group, I guess that's from within MultiChoice, and two investment groups, one headed by Sonia de Brain. You might recall that she was involved in fighting the Dimension Data executives, and the other by Sipho Maseko, who you'd recall the name from Telkom, where he was chief executive. So Sonia de Brain and Sipho Maseko, their organizations are called Identity Partners and AfriFund, are going to be significant shareholders in the company that owns the license for MultiChoice in South Africa. MultiChoice Group, the rest of MultiChoice in South Africa, will go to Canal Plus, as will the other organizations on the continent. But this license holder will be taking my fees, and I'm sure yours, that we pay every month for MultiChoice. So the other bit of news to come out on the Stock Exchange News Service today was from Pick n Pay and Boxer. They gave a trading update, those two companies, for the 10 months to the 5th of January. Pick n Pay is still struggling. Its like-for-like sales in that period were up 1.6%. Boxer, which you may recall, was separately listed recently. Its sales up 6.7%. So no surprise to see that Boxer continues to outperform and good news for Pick n Pay that it's held on to a big slug of it. Pick n Pay's shares went up 4% on the news, and they've been performing terribly well in the most recent past, as it appears as though, slowly but surely, the new CEO, reinstalled Sean Summers, is making the right kind of moves. Boxer was up by 1.5% today. And a story that you might have missed yesterday from ArcelorMittal, it brought out a trading update for the 12 months to the end of December, and it's telling us that headline earnings per share will fall from a loss of R1.70 a share to a loss of R4 a share, so 140% worse off. Not surprisingly, the share price continues to fall. It was down by another 12% in the last 5 days. On to Palantir Technologies, where it's the other side of the coin. Palantir has been an outperformer for the BizNews portfolios, and premium subscribers to BizNews were able to participate in our monthly webinar that we held today. Palantir's share price jumped by 20% in the aftermarket following the release of financial results last night, our time, after the US markets had closed. These results were far better than had been anticipated. Our partners at Bloomberg gave us the story.
Well, I think most analysts on Wall Street is really bearish on the company because the high valuation. But what company just delivered, it's just like amazing, right? It's the validation of their AI adoption story. I think they've been telling the investors since last year. We see Palantir has the potential to become the go-to operating system for enterprises in the AGI world because their AIP system, because especially their ontology system, is really creating a context layer for any companies, because that breaks down the data, logic, and action, and allows the large language model, and especially in 2025, the AI agent, to be deployed. That could be like a $1 trillion opportunity for the company going forward.
I'm curious, one of the reasons why you did see some bearishness in the stock, particularly over the last couple of years, was their dependence on government contracts. And we know they've kind of broadened out. I saw in the most recent quarter their commercial contracts business went up like 64% from a low base. Does that matter to you? Do they need to have that diversity? Or can that sweet spot be with government contracts, particularly given they seem to have a relatively good relationship with the new administration here in Washington?
Well, I think previously people are talking about their government contract and government business. But I see their commercial business has actually a better potential. Okay. Because as I said, I think large language model is now become more powerful. And especially in 2025, this AI agent could unlock tremendous opportunities and use cases for enterprises. But end of the day, you need companies like Palantir to educate company and help them deploy those large language models. And as I said, creating this context layer, we think is crucial for the AGI going forward. That's why our Crenshaw's AI ETF, AGIX, hold Palantir as the top holding.
I'm wondering how much you pay attention to things like insider sales, because it's been brought up that Peter Thiel, who's an early investor, along with the CEO and founder Alex Karp, have been among those who've been selling shares of the stock. Data show that insiders sold about $4 billion in stock last year. I know that's not a huge amount, but it's not necessarily a great sign, especially when, as you point out, a lot of analysts are not so hot on the stock with the lower price targets.
Yeah, I think that's not a great sign for insider sales, but I think also like Wall Street earnings not that bullish on the company, but just as I said, we see this is a critical player for AGI in terms of the context layer that's like necessary for any enterprises kind of adopt AI in a proper way.
That's our partners at Bloomberg, and Peter Thiel, who hails from Namibia, is the chairman of Palantir. Well, we close off with a insight from a local fund manager. David Bacher and I get together once a month to talk about the month that was. This time round, I asked him to give us some insights into the month that's coming. Here's what he said. Looking ahead to February, we haven't started off well.
We haven't. I think I said last program last month, be aware that this year is going to be a year of a lot of headlines, a lot of risk on, risk off. We are seeing that. And, you know, when things are a little bit more tricky, often opportunities to invest. You look at our South African bond market, you can get a real yield of 5%, 5.5% on some bonds. You know, a real yield, that means inflation plus 5.5% from a government-backed institution. That's a nice return. So don't be scared when there is a little bit of rumors. If you're getting compensated for that risk, then not a bad time to start increasing your exposure.
And David, just to close off with, there were many concerns during the period of load shedding. Load shedding came back briefly in the past week and now has been suspended again. How big a deal is that for investment markets?
You saw immediately when Eskom announced that there was load shedding, our bond yields picked up about 15 basis points. So ignoring the fact of its impact on job creation and small business, etc., just for the South African government's having to fund themselves at 15 basis points higher, is your immediate tell that it's not a good development and it will result in a bigger cost for South Africa.
As Rudyard Kipling said in his famous poem, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, it seems as though we can all draw some guidance from that. I'm Alec Hogg. Until the next time, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.